From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
Welcome back for another episode of PDGA Radio after a very exciting weekend. My goodness, I'm Steve Hill, joined by Sarah Sinclair. United States Disc Golf Champion Chris Dickerson is going to stop by later. We're going to talk about that. Women's Nationals. Sarah, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Very, very busy. Lots of disc golf extracurriculars kind of fell on my plate this past week, so I'm just trying to manage it all as best as I can and not
get
fired from my
job. You've always got some kind of project.
Oh my gosh, so many things.
That's good. Well, hey, yeah. we've got plenty to talk about on the show today. Real quick, ratings update. Holy cow, Paige Pierce 991. Did you see that?
I did see that. It's incredible.
The march toward 1,000 continues. Sarah, I have a question that I'm wondering if you can answer for me. How many people play disc golf, do you think?
Well, I have no clue, but I know it's way more. So if I've learned anything from my husband, Sean, it's yes, our PDGA membership grows exponentially from year to year, but that doesn't even begin to tap the surface of the number of people who just play like casually, recreationally, have a couple discs, have a couple beers, like have no idea who Paul McBeth is, don't watch tournaments, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
So a lot. I'm sure there's a lot more that are not PDGA members.
But we don't really know, right? So that's kind of...
We have no clue.
So with that in mind, I'm going to give a little plug for something that we are doing at UDisc right now, that we're asking for disc golfers everywhere to help with, and it's called Count the Sport. And essentially what we want to do is we want to be able to answer that question better of how many people play disc golf. We know we can have PDGA membership numbers. We know there's all this exponential growth over courses and events the last few years, and you know, manufacturers doing really well, but we want to be able to actually try and answer that question more. And so what we're doing is we're asking people to go out, spend an hour at your course, any course near you, and just hang out and count the people who start around. Report it to us at udisc.com/count. And then what we're going to do is we're going to work with some statistics students and a professor from BYU, try and crunch some numbers and compare it against UDisc's own like internal scoring data, because basically, you know, UDisc knows that there's certain amounts of people playing disc golf on the UDisc app, but even that is not everyone. But what we're hopeful to be able to do is kind of compare the number of people on UDisc and use that as kind of a model to extrapolate how many disc golfers there are as a whole. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So in order to do that, we want some people to be able to go to the course and count. So like Sarah, let's say you went to, what's your nearest course that you play all the time?
That's a hard question.
Not honestly. Your house course. Come on.
Okay. So I guess Ethan Page, I don't even really think about it as a course cause it's so tiny, but that would actually be a really good, cause it's like a beginner friendly course.
Right.
I could just sit in my car and just stalk people for an hour.
Exactly. And so let's say like 20 people played in an hour. We could go in on UDisc and look and see how many people started around on UDisc at that course in that same hour, mm-hmm. and kind of compare it. And that's going to be able to help us determine that number, you know, better. Like if only 4 people started around on UDisc and you saw 20 people play, that means, you know, hopefully we can get to a point where we're saying one round started on UDisc equals X number of disc golfers as a whole. So that's kind of the point of this whole initiative. So if you can go to udisc.com/count, you can learn more. And we're just asking for people to volunteer a little bit. Disc golfers already volunteer all the time. You volunteer helping out at your course, running tournaments. So this is just another way to do that. You can bring your putters, listen to this podcast. Stop this podcast right now. Go to the course, start counting people, turn the podcast back on. It'll pass the time.
Yeah, that's actually a great idea. Just listen to this podcast or any podcast in the car for, I mean, this course specifically, the parking lot is like right behind hole one.
Yeah.
So really the only place for me to be there and not be shady would be in my car.
Yeah, I mean, like my local course, We've got practice baskets where I can see from the baskets to hole one. So
yeah.
I can sit there and putt until my arm falls off for an hour and count some people. So if we have people helping out with that, it'd be huge. We're doing this until the end of the month. Yeah, hopefully we can get a real picture of who's playing disc golf. Okay, Sarah, let's talk Women's National Championship, United States Disc Golf Championship. We mentioned Chris Dickerson. We have to talk about Paige Pierce, who we already talked about in terms of the ratings. 991, holy cow. Add to that her 15th career PDGA major victory. That's kind of a lot.
Yeah, it is.
Give me your takes. What did you think of the women's battle?
I mean, it was really, really exciting. So Paige shot 10 under par the first round, and I was like, that's the ball game. That's what people say, right? There goes the ball.
Yes.
There goes
yes,
the ball
there's,
game.
There's, I don't think it's there goes the ball game, just game. Yeah, ball game. It's more like there goes the neighborhood, I think.
Yes,
is what
okay, maybe
for.
I'm just mixing two things. So, yeah, so she shot 10 down, and of course, on a course like that where there's tons of out of bounds and potentially wind, and we had the Hurricane Delta coming through, like, you never really know.
Yeah, there was a lot of ball game left at that point.
There was, yeah, but I was like, oh man, she's going to do Paige Pierce things, and if someone else is not shooting as consistently, she's just going to run away with it again. Luckily, that didn't happen. She continued to shoot really well. But Katrina Allen also gave her a run for her money.
Yeah, man, she came close a couple times.
She did. I mean, she came close, like, so she got her by four, and really where, I mean, she started running out of holes at the end, but she was just battling so hard. Like, so this is the final round. So hole 10, they both took an eagle, and then Paige took one more birdie, and Kat went birdie, birdie, birdie. And then so they were a couple strokes apart, and it, you know, everything really comes down to 17 when you come down the stretch, and that's really where the nail biter was happening, because everyone starts like running the numbers in their head. They're like, all right, if Kat does this and Paige does that, then Kat's got a couple, you know, a stroke to play with, or she can tie her on 18, and that's when really things happen. And Kat, and I completely agree with her doing this, like she had to force the birdie on hole 17. So she went for the pretty aggressive forehand shot over the water, just hoping to pin it, and unfortunately came up short in the water.
I was gonna say, it looked like, because at that point the weather was pretty rough, it almost looked like it kind of like hooked on her finger, or just the grip was funky.
Yeah, possibly. But I mean, she gave it all she had, and she had to be aggressive, and she ended up going in the water, and then Paige ended up going out of bounds as well. So Paige takes a five, Katrina takes a six, and at that point it's kind of like, there goes the neighborhood.
There you
the
go.
Ball game.
The ball game was over. These
but,
are good.
Yeah, but Katrina still never gave up, and she ended up taking a birdie four on hole 18. And Paige knew that she had a few strokes to work with, and, you know, ended up just parring hole 18 for the win.
Yeah, it was a really good battle. I mean,
yeah,
minus that first round, and like, Kat had like one blow up hole during round two. She took the eight on hole five, that big long water hole. And even with that, she still hit like a 50 footer. So there were just a couple too many OB strokes occasionally. You know, I was surprised. I thought this would be a tournament where, you know, I think we talked about it last week, where their OB rates would be significantly apart, because Paige just plays so much more aggressively. Paige actually had a slightly better OB rate.
Yeah, she was fourth in OB. And
yeah,
I believe
fourth
Kat
in
was
OB
fifth.
And Kat was fifth. 0.208 to 0.222. So not that far apart. Probably only one or two OB throws. But, you know, always good to see them battle. I mean, they're kind of the rivals in that division over the last several years. So good tournament. Congratulations to Paige. Yeah, and I know you have some other notes in here about the FPO side. Let's hear them.
Yeah, so I was very excited to be able to watch Owen play again. When I first started playing professionally back in the end of 2014, 2015 in Pittsburgh was my first professional world championship, and Owen ended up taking fourth, so I got to watch her play on the lead card, yep. And she's just, like, electrifying.
She's got a baller forehand.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Well, her forehand and backhand are just super solid, and then she actually was first in circle 1x putting at 95% over the whole event. Like, she's just canning them all over the place. So I love watching her, and she can really put pressure on some of the top women. So I'm really looking forward to continuing to watch her on lead cards.
Yeah, I mean, top five finish, like, fifth place finish for your first year, really kind of back hitting it hard. And yeah. Really, she didn't properly tour.
Not really, no.
I mean, tremendous showing.
For sure. And then Sarah Hokum actually had the hot round, the fourth round,
yeah,
shooting a seven under par. Yep, and she went from fifth up to tied for third with Heather Young. And I really think Hokum's conservative play really pays off in general when you hit a course like this with tons of out of bounds. She's not, I mean, she can throw far. Don't get me wrong, but she's not in the same kind of distance league as Paige or Katrina, so
right.
she's not like airing it out as much, and she's really, really good in the woods, which a lot of times is super tight lines, and that kind of, I feel like that helped her here on this course, and it also helps that it seems like this course really favors lefties or forehand dominant players, so I feel like that worked for her advantage too, and it goes to show she was first in lack of OB strokes. So that was awesome. Good for her for shooting that hot round. And then this is kind of funny. I don't think I would have realized this if Rebecca Cox hadn't posted it to Facebook. But she said, this is a first for her and maybe a first ever in a tournament where she shot ratings in the 800s, 900s, and 1000s.
Wow.
And her... I think her last round was like 10-10 rated, but it shot her up 6 strokes that final round. Nope, 10-11. Sorry, I don't want to take 1 point away from her. So, yeah, that was pretty cool that she was able to do that as well.
Yeah, it's nice to see her kind of get back in the mix. I feel like she's had a bit of an off year. So
yeah.
To have her make that final round push at a big tournament, I think is pretty... probably pretty important for her on a confidence scale.
Yep, for sure.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, you know, over on the USDGC side, it was, I mean, at first it didn't look like it was going to be a battle. Chris Dickerson comes out guns blazing, 10 down, 14 down. What was his third round? Third round was like 8 down, yeah. And, you know, he goes into the final with 4 shots. Granted, at Winthrop, 4 shots is not that much, but it's an... It could be enough until the weather. And
right.
My goodness, the torrential rain and wind, you know, kind of just had Chris looking like he was playing a pretty conservative game plan. And you can't do that when you have, you had like hurricane weather, and here you have Calvin Heimberg from Florida, home of the Hurricanes, coming out and literally looking like nothing was impacting him.
Incredible.
He went like, what did he go? 9 down in the first 10 holes? No, actually, 9 down. No, 10 down through 11, I think, if I'm doing the math right. Just was on such a tear and overtakes Dickerson on the course from the chase card. And, man, it really ended up being a battle. Obviously, Chris was able to come out with the win. Calvin, really unfortunate situation on the island where, on 17, he hits the basket and rolls into the water. It was just heartbreaking.
Yeah, it was devastating.
But man, what a performance by him, and what a performance by Chris Dickerson to get the first, you know, major victory of his career. I feel like we've been talking about him for, you know, a couple years now, from all the way back from, like, is Chris Dickerson underrated, to, you know, the weekly Chris Dickerson segment on the show because we're just so impressed with him being a stud who doesn't tour as much, to major victory. And it's just really cool to see that trajectory and to have it pay off with this kind of performance. I think he's a very deserving United States champion. I think it's a it's cool too to me because it kind of keeps in this tradition of USDGC. Oftentimes, you know, I mean, I think we may have talked about this on the show last week. Will Schustrick is like a 3-time champion, and you had Climo and Barry doing their thing back in the day several years in a row, but it does not often yield multi-time or repeat champs. And so, you know, we talked about maybe Eagle gaining his first one or Ricky gaining his first one. I wasn't really thinking about Chris Dickerson coming in. I think of him as more of a Woods technical guy. But, you know, if you're a Woods technical guy, you can play this course because you need to be technical just in a different way. And so
exactly, yeah.
To see him come out and demonstrate such mastery and such like mental fortitude was fantastic. And I think, you know, in kind of like the disc golf mainstream will earn him just so much more respect than he already got and really put him into that regular conversation more often, which he more than deserves. So I was really pleased to watch that. I will not lie though and say that I was rooting for like maximum chaos. I wanted Calvin to like tie it and go to a playoff.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, I mean, know.
Like I was asking Sean. Yeah, I was asking Sean because if you've listened to this podcast, you know that I have like a terrible memory for things. But I was like, has anyone ever won a big event like this from the third card? I mean, not that I wanted.
Was it third card? I think he was second card, wasn't he? I think he was
second card. No, he was on the third card. Yes.
No, he was okay, second card.
Are you sure?
Calvin was second card.
Are you sure?
I'm looking at it right now on UDisc where it says card two.
Okay. I was.
I mean, he was down though. He was down like four. He was down in. Let me think here. No, he was in fifth. Yeah.
Okay. Well, never.
He was
mind.
Down fairly significantly. So yeah. I mean, you understand. Like there was enough.
He was
of a
10
spread.
Down. He yeah, was he was 10 down yeah, going exactly. into the final round. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Either way, it would have been fantastic. I don't know if anyone has come from the Chase card to ever win USDGC.
I don't know. That's
a good question. But either way, a lot of fun to watch. You know, Calvin's performance, like, unreal for him. And you got to kind of wonder, you know, he came out the first round and did not look like Calvin at all. Looked really shaky. Missed a lot of putts. Just didn't look like he had that Calvin swagger. He had 8 OB strokes, a 70% circle one putting. Even second round, he was a little rough in the circle one putting. The whole tournament, really. You know, final round, I kind of give him a pass. But just didn't look quite like himself, and you got to kind of wonder if he had maybe was able to clean up that first round a little bit. If things could have been different, but that's not how tournaments work. And then, you know, I mean, we could talk for days. This MPO field was so stacked. You know, Paul Ewellberry shooting up into the top 10 final round was fantastic. I was disappointed. I thought Eagle was maybe going to be able to make a push final round, and he just didn't have it. Let's talk about Kyle Klein. Like, we've seen a lot out of this kid the last few weeks, and to come out at 18 years old and do a top 5 showing and be on the lead card a couple days at USDGC, Sarah, it's pretty
impressive.
His
putting, oh my gosh. Like, his circle 2 putting, I'm not sure exactly what were his stats on that.
Circle 2, he was at 29%. He only okay. he made 6 on the weekend.
Well, I must
so
have
maybe
seen
he was
all
hitting like edge. Well, he had a few from like 27, which is, you know, borderline too.
Yeah, yeah, true. Yeah, I mean, if you can get on the feature card at or the top card at a major like this at 18 years old, I mean, him and Heather Young, that just really shows your like your ceiling is so high and yeah. your maturity and just ability to overcome. I mean, disc golf is super mental, but this course is like multiplied by 100. I mean,
absolutely.
Just if you just listen to we talked to Chris Dickerson a lot about his mental game and just like the walk to 17 and just how this course is just so mentally grueling. And it's 4 days. Like, yeah. I can't imagine how exhausted everybody is. So it's really cool to see such young players get up in the mix like that.
You know, and I think some of that youth maybe is like beneficial too, right? Like
energy.
Well, energy. And there was Kyle did an interview after round 3 where he was like, you know, I came into this thing and like I really just wanted to get top 10, and now that I'm in second place, I might as well just try and go win it.
Yeah,
you know, like having being able to just kind of like youthful exuberance like that was great, and like you could tell it kind of started to wear on him the final round in those conditions, and things started slipping away. But man, his future is really bright. I'm excited to see, you know, it'll be exciting to see how he kind of rebounds from a rough final round going into the DGPT championship this weekend. We'll talk about that after the break. Rest of the top 10. So Ricky Wysocki, number 3, Garrett Gerthy, top 5, sneaking in. I mean, not sneaking in. He came up 5 spots the final round. That one was kind of surprising to me. I like seeing that. Paul McBeth tied for 5th with Kyle Klein. That's one that you like hang in your personal history books. Yeah. Hey guys, I tied
I'm
Paul McBeth.
I'm as good
USDGC.
As Paul McBeth.
Yeah. Yeah. Paul Uelberry, Eagle McMahon, Chris Clemens, Johnny McRae, Adam Hammes, Nathan Queen round out the top 10. And my final thoughts, Sarah, I really enjoyed the coverage. I know it was the pay-per-view thing. Maybe not everyone liked that, but I thought the Juliana Corver, Hannah McBeth pairing was very solid for FPO. I really enjoyed. You could tell they were well prepared and just very professional in their tone and their demeanor. And then Ian Anderson, Philo Brathwaite, and Nate Sexton having like a 3-man booth with 2 top pros being able to bring in their insights. I thought Ian did a really good job of kind of keeping them on track, feeding them questions, things like that. And like, me personally, I was a little skeptical about how maybe the post-produced running commentary style would come over to live.
Mm-hmm.
They still kept a lot of that style, but I liked it. I could listen to Philo talk about disc golf all day.
Oh my gosh, yeah. He's so comfortable just commentating. I mean, yeah, I actually love that duo a lot. And fortunately, I guess bittersweetly, we also had Nate Sexton kind of pop in and out of both sides of coverage because
he got
unfortunately
hurt.
had to drop from the event, which I am really good at picking people for our picks each week that have dropped from events, I guess. I feel like I've done that many times this year, including Nate Sexton. But it was really cool to get his insights. I think he's absolutely a natural at commentary as well.
Yeah.
And I saw, of course, everyone's posting about everything on Facebook and Instagram and stuff during USCGC, but someone was like, Nate Sexton, like basically fight me. Nate Sexton will be, if anyone goes to like ESPN as a disc golf commentator, it will be Nate Sexton. And I was like, yeah, I could totally see that.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's
very well spoken, has a lot of polish, really strong insights, but also isn't afraid to like call it like it is. And, but can be funny. Yeah, he does a great job.
Yeah, he's super professional.
Here's my hypothetical for you, Sarah. So this is something that I was kind of considering over the weekend. And none of this is a knock on Philo Brathwaite and his proficiency as a disc golfer. So I want to caveat all of that with this. But Philo last year, and I'm counting 2019, not 2020, because, you know, nothing counts in 2020. Philo Brathwaite last year in just tournament earnings, tournament winnings, so not taking into account, you know, Tour Series disc sponsorship, whatever. He made that's this year. Wow, he did pretty well this year. Last year, $14,238 in prize money. The year before that, $17,000 roughly. If you are the Disc Golf Network, do you go to Philo Brathwaite and say, hey, we'll pay you double that and come anchor our commentary?
Maybe.
If you're Philo Brathwaite, do you take that?
I don't know. It depends on how much he wants to play disc golf.
He could play some events in between.
Yeah, for sure.
I think it'd be interesting. I don't know who would co-anchor with him.
I was kind of thinking about that too. I was like, I wonder how much USDGC had to pay him for him not to play.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because that's, I mean, that's,
and again, this
like
also this
aside,
none of this is meant as a knock on like the on, current yeah. DGN commentary team. I just know with Nate and Val like running a brewery, that's their main business. You know what I mean? So eventually, you kind of wonder if you're going to have a more stable commentary team for the Pro Tour, like someone who travels around on site booth, things like that. Anyway, this is all just me being a sports fan. I love this kind of stuff. The commentary was great on both sides, and well done, everybody.
Yeah.
All right, Sarah, let's take a break and let's talk to the man of the hour, Mr. Chris Dickerson, and see how he's feeling after his first career major victory, and then we will come back and talk Pro Tour Championship. So we'll be back in just a moment on PDGA Radio. This episode of PDGA Radio is presented by Marion County, West Virginia. Experience some of West Virginia's best disc golf. With two courses of their own and more than 25 others within a two-hour drive, you can always be ready for a round. Top the day off with a renowned pepperoni roll, local craft brew, or a one-of-a-kind dessert, and you've got an ace. Come discover the middle of everywhere in Marion County, West Virginia. Visit marioncvb.com for more information. All right, welcome back to the program, and I'm sure it hasn't set in yet, but this has a nice ring to it. United States Disc Golf Champion Chris Dickerson. Chris, how's it going, man? Congratulations.
I'm doing okay. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Have you gotten used to hearing that yet? Is anyone calling you U.S. champion to your face on the regular?
Yeah, I haven't got used to it yet, but I was practicing the course yesterday and today, and a few people, you know, said, "Hey, what's up, champ? How's it going, champ?" And you know, it makes me smile every time I hear it. So it's a great feeling.
That's awesome. So how are you feeling in addition to just kind of getting used to all the notoriety?
You know, feeling pretty good overall. I made that post about, or actually Brittany made that post about anxiety and struggling with that here lately, but you know, besides that, everything else is, you know, going pretty good.
Well, from my perspective, you 1,000% deserve all the accolades and celebration that you're getting as the event champion. So I hope that helps to alleviate your anxiety about not feeling like you're worthy. But you, in me and Steve's hearts and minds, we believe wholeheartedly that you are. So.
Oh.
I appreciate that.
Yeah,
1,000,000%. Of course. Yeah.
So let's talk about this tournament a little bit. Obviously, USDGC is this terrible, daunting, frightening thing, at least if you're a person like me. But I'm, you know, you've kind of gotten, for better or worse, this reputation this year for these, like, late round comebacks, right? Like we had Dicker Sunday earlier this season where it was you would make these big late round comebacks, but maybe just come up a little short. So this tournament, you kind of flip that. You build up, you shoot super hot early, had a lead to work with. You know, what was kind of your strategy going into this tournament? Was that it? Was it start hot, protect a lead? You know, kind of walk me through the thought process there.
So actually, first, I want to comment on Dicker Sunday.
Yeah.
I've never heard that before. That is hilarious.
Oh, you haven't heard that yet? Cool.
I have not. But back to the tournament, I didn't really have a game plan as far as, you know, I need to birdie these holes and I need to get a hot lead or anything like that. But I will say that practicing for the tournament, I got a good idea of, you know, which holes would be easier to score on. So basically I would decide on how to play the hole or if I should attack the hole or not, depending on, you know, the conditions that day, the direction of the wind, how much wind was actually blowing, stuff like that, whenever I got to that hole. So actually, a hole, for example, 14 coming down the backside of the Coliseum. It's a par three and it has the round bells on the left. The first day was a headwind. So I threw a mid and it held it straight and it didn't allow it to, you know, fade one way or the other. And I think I put it like 5 feet. The last day, however, it was more of a tail crosswind. So I played it a little more out to the right because I didn't know if the disc would fade being, you know, more of a tailwind. And I think I put it a little outside the circle and missed the putt. But, you know, it's just playing each hole, assessing the situation whenever I got there.
Now, I got to ask, second round, you shoot this incredible 14 under. You know, I think, what, seven or eight straight birdies to start, only a single bogey. And then Alex Russell has to go and outdo you by one shot. Did you give him a hard time for that?
No, I didn't. So I was playing the second round with Kyle Klein, and I remember on hole eight, I think he said something like, yeah, this is the hole that Alex missed. And I was like, oh, what, did he start off good or something? And they're like, yeah, you know, he started off seven straight birdies. So I threw my second shot on eight, got up to the putt. I think it was around like 28 feet or so. And I told myself, I was like, okay, this is to get one more than Alex got to start.
Nice.
So that was motivation for that putt.
So I'm assuming you don't mind hearing those types of things during the round. Because I feel like a lot of people that would have like thrown them off. But you're pretty cool as a cucumber. It doesn't seem like that would really affect you mentally, or it didn't, obviously. Like, how do you kind of deal with the mental part of the game like that?
Yeah, so a lot of things tend to not bother me while I'm playing. Used to, I didn't want to know what I was shooting, but here lately I found myself actually keeping up with where I'm at through the round in my head. So I don't know. It just depends on the situation, I guess. But the majority of the time, no, it's not going to bother me to know like what other people are shooting.
Okay. That makes sense. So speaking of that, so the fourth round, I am assuming that you did know how close Calvin was getting to you.
Yes. I found out on hole, it was either 9 or 10. I checked.
Oh, wow.
U-disc. And yeah, because up until that point, I was just playing against my card mates because I had 4 on Kyle to start the round, 6 on Eagle and 9 on Alex. So I figured, you know, as long as I play decent to good, 9 strokes should be, you know, enough to, you know, Alex yeah. was the last person I need to worry about, really. And whenever I checked scores on hole 9 or 10, obviously that was not the case. Alex was not the last person I need to worry about. Because Calvin was, I think he was 1 or 2 back before hole 10. And then I took a 7, which gave him the lead, I believe.
Yeah, it got, I think that's about what happened right there was the shift. Yeah, it was a 5-stroke like shift on just that one hole.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe after the fact it's easier to know, but like did knowing that have anything to do with hole 10? I mean, that was probably one of your more difficult spots of the tournament, and you had just kind of found out that someone was going crazy. Was there a correlation there, do you think?
There could have been, but I don't know if there was a direct correlation, because my play for hole 10 was always to throw a putter to the left and then have the approach and then have a putt for birdie. That round, you know, it was pouring rain.
Right.
I tried to throw a baseline grippy disc, and it was a little bit of a crosswind, so I didn't want to put – it was a straighter disc also, so it wasn't something I could throw out there and know it was going to hyzer. So I had to throw it on some hyzer. I didn't want to throw too much hyzer because, like the crosswind, I didn't want it to push out of bounds left. So I threw it a little bit of hyzer. It got the flat, and whenever it got over just a little bit, that crosswind just mashed it into the ground. It was a low shot to begin with, but that crosswind made sure it wasn't going to get to the inbounds area. So I advanced to the drop zone, and I wanted to throw a low overstable shot where, you know, there was a little bit of a head cross at the drop zone, and a driver coming in and skipping, with it being wet and with that wind, it was probably going to get a pretty decent skip. So I wanted to keep the shot low and on a little bit of hyzer, and I managed to throw it into the only bush on that hole.
Yep.
You know, it's dead center in the middle of the OB, and it's probably like a 5 foot tall, maybe 3 foot wide bush, and I threw it straight in the middle of that thing.
So I mean, the wheels definitely, I mean, came off a little bit, it seemed like there. What did you, you know, what were you telling yourself then after you tap out of that hole? You go over to 10, like what did you do to get yourself kind of back on track, or at least not let the moment get like too out of hand?
Yeah. So after I threw my second one out of bounds, I threw the next one, got it in bounds, and I went back under my umbrella while everyone else was throwing. And I just kind of thought to myself, you know, he's shooting this hot round. You're basically falling apart on this one hole. Maybe it's just not meant to be your year. And I finished out the hole, got to 11, and I think I checked the scores again, and I was behind by, I don't know, I think one, maybe two. And then I kind of had another conversation with myself. I was like, hey, you know, this could be the closest chance that you're going to have to win USDGC. Who knows? And I was like, it's definitely your closest chance so far. So let's try and get some birdies and see what happens. So I was able to birdie 11, par 12, birdie 13, and that kind of got me back in it.
Well, you need to tell the listeners, if they hadn't watched it yet, what happened on 13 as you approached the basket.
Okay, so first shot was, it was a little short, but it was on the left side of the fairway. My second shot went around the bush on the left, stayed near the path. I think it was maybe just across the path to the right. My third shot, I didn't want to throw a putter because, it was a little windy. I didn't want to have to throw it that hard. So I just threw a mid range, and I told myself, get it to the basket. That way you have a putt. So I threw it, and I was like, yeah, I think that's there. And it got up the flat. I think what really helped the disc get there was it was a little bit of a left or right, so the wind got under it just a little bit. And as the disc was approaching the basket, I was like, no, you need to get down, because I think it's within 30 feet behind it. It might be right at 30 feet is the road behind the basket. But the disc was just low enough to hit the top of the basket, and it stayed 10 feet or so away.
It was an incredible shot.
Yeah, it was super exciting. I was definitely screaming. It was nuts. So what, obviously the weather was horrendous, round four. I honestly have never seen some tee pads like that in disc golf history. Like, it's so good that they were able to clear a lot of the water off of some of the tee pads, so you guys were even able to throw and not be in like ankle deep water. What do you think made it so that you were able to power through this adversity so successfully when other players really, really struggled?
Yeah, physical and mental, right? I mean, yeah, there was a lot going on.
Right. Let's see, the physical side of it, I would have to say the number one thing was being able to have a grip on the disc. So starting with hole 8, you know, it's a long par 4, but I teed, actually, it was like hole six. I teed off with a 300 plastic PA1, so just a grippy baseline disc to try and stay in bounds whenever, you know, the rain's pouring down. I did that on 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10, all in the rain, trying to throw that same disc. And, you know, it usually we don't play those holes for just a layup off the tee pad, and especially the majority of people aren't throwing a putter off the tee pad. But I felt like in those situations, it was probably the smartest thing to do. So even later in the round, I got to hole 16. It wasn't raining anymore, but I was keeping up with the score, and I knew I just needed to go par, par, par to be able to win by two. And on 16, I came off the tee with a 300 PA3 just to stay in the middle, threw the PA1 to the basket, and advanced to 17. So actually, funny story, I was throwing the 300 PA1, and to eliminate having to mark the disc, pick it up, take the time to dry it off, getting the towel wet and everything, on hole 9, my second shot was with one of my practice putters. I keep three putters in my bag, the main putter, and then I have the second putter that I hold in my left hand while I'm putting, and the other one is just in there as a practice putter. I've honestly never thrown that disc. The only thing it has done is been putted toward a basket, so I had no idea how it was going to fly. And, you know, putting with the disc, it's going to beat it up a little bit, but I didn't know how much. So I took a huge leap of faith by throwing that disc for my second shot on hole 9. And, you know, I think it paid off because I threw it a few times throughout that round.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
What's, you know, describe for me, tell me, what is that walk like from 16 to 17? I've always thought of it as this big scary thing. They talk about it on the broadcast. You know, take us back to that walk for you, and if you can, you know, describe it for us.
Oh, yeah. So, like you said, on the broadcast, they say, I didn't listen this year, but I've heard in years past, you know, going into that hole with the lead or it being close to the lead, it's the most terrifying walk in disc golf because you have such a long way to walk. You probably have like 2 to 3 minutes to just be alone with your thoughts. And that is a scary thing, honestly, because thoughts tend to creep in your head, like, you know, what if you mess this up? What if, you know, you throw it too short? What if you throw it too long? Because the rules are you have to land on the island to advance. So yeah, that walk is everything that they describe it as. It is terrifying, to be honest.
I mean, they had a camera on you the whole time. Did you know that camera was, I mean, did you know the camera was, I mean, it was right there, man. You knew it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I knew it. And, I think I was just telling myself, you know, don't look at the camera. Just don't look at it.
Yeah. That can't help with the nerves. I mean, at least for me, that would just make the anxiety way more heightened. Okay, yeah. Here's the big question that everybody wants to know. What did Chris Dickerson do to celebrate?
Honestly, nothing yet. After it was done, the next day we had to run home and get some stuff done at our house before driving back the same night. So I really haven't had time to celebrate, really. The closest thing we had to a celebration was me and Brittany had a date night last night, but that was about it.
What do you want to do to celebrate?
Ooh, that's a good question. I don't know because, to be honest, I love playing tournaments and I love, you know, getting done with one, going on, practicing to the next. So, I mean, I'm perfectly content with what I'm doing now, but I don't know off the top of my head to do something to celebrate. I couldn't tell you.
What about just the third Disc Golf Pro Tour Championship?
You know, that'd be a great celebration.
I mean, how do you kind of approach this week? I mean, coming off of USDGC, the biggest win of your career, it's, there's obviously got to be a big emotional swing, and it's going to be, I would think it might be hard to get yourself back in that competitive mode. So, have you figured out how you're going to kind of approach everything for this weekend?
Kind of. I'm still in the process of figuring that out because I've been out to the course. I've practiced it the last couple of days, and I'm going to continue to practice it, you know, up until the day I play because it'll be good to what I plan to do is starting on Thursday. Thursday is the first day. I'm going to go out, play my practice round, play it as a scoring round, and see how that score compares to what the scores are, you know, put up
Oh,
from the first
yeah.
round. And then, you know, the same thing on Friday to see how those compare. And then, you know, Saturday is the day it starts for me. So, yeah, preparation for me is a little bit of practice and then basically playing the tournament without actually playing the tournament.
Now, how do you feel going in this year? Because if I recall correctly, the last Was it last year? Did you have to play all four rounds to win it?
Both years I
Both
had to play all
years.
four rounds.
Okay, so you've got half of that, right? You've got until Saturday. You're into the what is it? The quarter, the semifinals, right? So, have you thought about that at all in terms of, obviously it's giving you a little more time to prepare, but. Did playing, do you think maybe playing those first two rounds kind of helped get you into a groove at all?
I think it kind of did, because, like I said, you're playing in a tournament setting, and you're playing against people. You get to see the rounds they put up while, you know, practicing the course basically for the next round as you're playing. So, yeah, going out and playing Thursday and Friday, I think, is going to be similar, if not the same thing, without actually playing. So, my strategy is basically the same as years past.
Okay. All right, now we're talking about all this disc golf. I want to shift gears a little bit to the really important topics of your interest in chicken fingers, because this gets talked
Okay.
about so often, I feel like. So really, I'm just gonna throw this out at you, okay?
Okay.
Zaxby's, Chick-fil-A, Raising Cane's, or other? What's your choice?
Ooh. Okay. You
You can
know, here
rank them if
lately.
you need to. Do your thing, man. Let's go. Let's just have we could have a whole segment on Chris Dickerson's chicken takes.
Okay. Here lately, I have had a decent amount of Raising Cane's because, you know, it's in, or I mean, it may be in other places. I'm sure it is, but it's in the central Kentucky area. And I played a few tournaments in that area this year. I had it a couple years ago and I didn't really care for it. However, I revisited it and overall, as a meal, I think it's my favorite. But I will say Chick-fil-A's chicken is better. But going through Raising Cane's, you get the chicken, the fries, and then they have a piece of Texas toast. And
oh, yeah.
That toast is amazing.
That sounds like what you would get at Zaxby's, though. It's just that much better.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's basically the same. But, no, Zaxby's doesn't even touch it.
Is there another place that I'm leaving off?
I was thinking about this about a month ago.
Is that a thing?
PDQ is in, I've had it in Florida.
Okay.
And it's pretty
Georgia
good.
Too, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, I would, as far as fast food, I would barely rank Cane's over Chick-fil-A.
All right. There we go. We got to get you a sponsorship. I wonder if we could reach
Absolutely.
All right, and then one more real hard-hitting question. These are, again, really the important questions. These jerseys you have rolled out this year have been amazing.
Epic.
And I think it's been fun, too, because I think, you know, at least me and, like, most people think of you as a pretty, like, you're pretty, you know, down-to-earth, even-keel, just, you know, not too flashy. But some of the kit you've been rolling out has been pretty sweet. So I mean, how did the inspiration come up for some of these, especially the final round with the obviously it's Volunteers colors, right?
Right. So I think it was last year at the Pro Tour Championship. Big Germ was talking to me about all of these different nicknames that he's given me, or that Nate
right.
has given me, or anyone else, and he mentioned the Limestone Cowboy, and I was like, what, do you just want me to show up to hole one day wearing like a button-up flannel shirt with blue jeans, a big belt buckle, and a cowboy hat? I was like, is that what you're expecting? And honestly, that gave me the idea for the jersey. I was like, we need a flannel shirt, but it's got to be dry fit material. And you know, we that just got the ball rolling, and I mentioned it to Savage, and they thought it was a pretty good idea. So, yeah, we came out with the red and black one, and then we had a really good idea of, you know, making it Volunteers colors, where, you know, the end zones are the orange and white checkerboard. So I thought, what better than putting it on a flannel shirt, having the same thing? And I was really happy with how it turned out because they matched the color. You know, Tennessee orange isn't exactly like a normal color of
right.
orange. It's a little faded. And I'm glad with that they were able to match that color and not give me like an Auburn orange or a Texas Longhorn orange.
Yeah, you can't have the Texas has a very distinct, like, that burnt orange. You can't mess with that.
Yeah. I will say this. I was looking through some of the comments on Facebook, and somebody posted, they were like, you know, shout out to Chris for being the only person to win a major in probably the silliest looking shirt I've ever seen. And I was like, you know what? I don't even care. Go Vols.
I love it, man. I think
me too.
You, I think maybe what needs to happen next crossover between you and Germ should be one weekend you wear one of Germ's outfits and then he wears one of your like flannel shirts, because he's had some crazy outfits lately.
Absolutely. Yeah, he's been doing a really good job, and he actually showed me a shirt he made. I think he made it last night, because Brittany said he was up till 3 a.m. making this shirt, because apparently before a Pro Tour event or before any big tournament where Jomez is going to be, him and Yuli play a practice round, you know, playing against each other.
Yep.
And he was telling me that he has won every single matchup. So he made a shirt, and on the back, on the very bottom, well, actually on the back, it says practice round print. And it's got a pretty cool looking crown that's incorporated some disc golf baskets. And on the very bottom, it said like Fox Run Meadows, and it had a not an X, but it's like, what is the Ghostbusters thing?
Oh, yeah, like a circle with a slash?
Yeah. That. So it's got that around Fox Run. The next one was like Maple Hill, then Jonesboro. And then it said Hornet's Nest, and it didn't have one of those yet because I think they either played today or maybe yesterday. But he also won that one. So,
oh, man. What a good track record.
I know. I told him he needs to keep this going and eventually just fill that shirt up.
Yeah. You might need a couple different shirts for all that.
Yeah.
Okay. This is something that we talked about very quickly when we... So you were here for Music City a few weeks ago, and a few of us went out to dinner, and I got to see your... So we were talking about just how picky of an eater you were, because I could not even fathom that there was someone pickier than my husband, Sean. And after comparing notes, I think Brittany and I were talking about some of your eccentricities when it comes to food taste. I was like, nope, you win. You're totally pickier than him. But I was interested. I think Will Schusterick was like, oh, no, but you would be very surprised at what he orders at Starbucks. So what is the Chris Dickerson order at Starbucks that we can all go and replicate?
Oh, I remember this. So I haven't had Starbucks in, I don't know, maybe a couple of years. But when I would get any kind of, you know, iced coffee, it would be a, I think it's a mocha frappuccino. No, nope. That was your favorite. Brittany's trying to tell me it was a double chocolatey chip frappuccino, which doesn't have any coffee in it whatsoever. But no, whenever I would get something, it was a mocha frappuccino, and I would usually get it from Dairy Queen. So, you know, it's got really good.
Okay, all right. Yeah, that sounds good. All right, now we all know.
There we go.
You eat chicken fingers. I was telling Steve that you had... I think you partook in chicken fingers and tortillas. And then you were, I was, he was like, any sauce or cheese? I was like, no, I don't think so.
That was, that was when I had to cancel the weekly Chris Dickerson segment, but obviously it's back on this week. So you've redeemed yourself, Chris.
Awesome.
Well, thanks for taking the time to come on, man. I know obviously when you win a huge tournament like this, you've got everyone knocking down your door for interviews. So thanks for taking the time. And, again, congratulations. Great to see it, as such a big thing coming, big things to come for the rest of your career, I'm sure, right?
You know, I sure hope so. But, no problem at all coming on these interviews. I really enjoy them. And, you know, thanks for having me.
Of course, man. All right. That was Chris Dickerson. We'll be back in just a moment on PDJ Radio. All right, it is time to fuel up for the Birdie Fuel Coffee Hot Rounds. Sarah, were all the hot rounds from Women's Nationals and U.S.? No, not even.
No.
I wonder if these, none of them were.
Well, because this is an X.
Yeah, but they show ratings.
Yeah.
But that's fine. We'll give the people who weren't there some love. It's all good.
They were still really exciting.
Yeah.
They were still very, very hot rounds, and some of them weren't even within the United States, so I always love that too.
All right.
All right, the fifth hottest rated round from the FPO side was from Christine King. She played at the Monarch Migration in Somerset, California. She shot a 970 her first round to take first place at that event. Congratulations. Jennifer Allen stayed out in Arizona this past weekend and played in the 22nd Aspen Sports Tree Bash Open driven by Innova, shooting a 971 her first round to take first at that event. Christine Jennings played in the Ironwood Open in Western Pennsylvania, shooting a super hot 985 her first round to take first place. Zoe Andike was out in Eugene, Oregon, playing the Eugene Disc Golf Celebration, the Show Must Go On Pro Day, shooting a 993 her first round to take first place. And so after all four of those hot rounds, I was like, man, there's... Like, I'm starting to see a pattern. They're shooting their first rounds, and they're shooting their hottest round, their first round, they're taking first place. Except for the hottest rated round, actually came from Tabia Vallis? Is that how you would say it?
That'll
okay.
Work.
She shot a 10-10 her second round to take first place at the Bern Open in Switzerland.
I think we say Bern.
Bern, okay.
I might be wrong.
I'm thinking New Bern, North Carolina.
Oh, okay.
But, of course, I have no idea how to pronounce anything that's...
I almost went to Bern last year when I was in France. We were like an hour from there in France, and we just didn't make it.
Well, then you should know.
It looks beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice. Very, very hot rounds.
Congratulations.
Yeah. All right. On the MPO side, our friend Mr. Andrew Fish with a 10:54 rated second round out at the 2020 Philadelphia Disc Golf Open. I'm going to guess that was in Philadelphia. And he won that tournament. Very nicely done, Mr. Fish. Austin Lytle at the 10th annual Iron Leaf Classic driven by Innova out in Atlanta shot a 10:59 rated second round to win that tournament. Mr. Zach Melton, unfortunately, he was not at USDGC, but he was winning the Premier Design Explore Suncrest out in Bristol, Virginia with a 10:60 rated first round. Tyler Horn out at the Ironwood Open shot a 10:65 rated first round to win that event. And the hottest rated round of the weekend was a 10:88 from Mr. Cameron Messerschmidt during the second round of the Sun King Presents Flying on the Fairways 2 in Largo, Florida. And he won that tournament as well. Congratulations to all of our hot round shooters. As a reminder, the hot rounds are brought to you by Birdie Fuel Coffee. You can go over to birdiefuelcoffee.com, use the code PDGARadio at checkout, get 10% off your order. Sarah, I'm going to guess today that you are drinking the Missy Yanim mix bag.
No, good Dang guess, it. Though. I was drinking the Sarah Hokum Sidearm Special again.
All right.
It's so good. It's a solid one. Can't go wrong. Yeah.
All right. This weekend, we've had this like abbreviated season, but it feels like we've had it just jam-packed this last couple months. And so we've got the last big tournament of the year. It is the Disc Golf Pro Tour Championship. This is out at the Hornet's Nest in Charlotte, North Carolina. And Sarah, this one, I always really enjoy this one because it's a different format than the other tournaments. Remember, this one works under like a bracket style. So you had to qualify for the Tour Championship by playing well enough this season on the tour. There were 32 players who qualified on the MPO side, 16 players who qualified on the FPO side, and basically they split it up into four rounds where, a couple people already get certain people get buys already through the rounds based on their performance this season. So, like, for example, I'm going to go back out all of my bracket picks so I can speak clearly about this. We have a bracket challenge we'll talk about. But basically, there are eight players who don't have to play on the MPO side until Saturday. Those players are Paul McBeth, Calvin Heimberg, Ricky Wysocki, Eagle McMahon, Chris Dickerson, Nicola Castro, Kevin Jones, and Garrett Gerthy, because they were the eighth best players in terms of Pro Tour points this year, so they kind of played well enough to make their way into it. For the FPO side, it's similar except for just four players getting to the semifinals. Those top four were Paige Pierce, Katrina Allen, Sarah Hokum, and Haley King. So you will not see a lot of the top players at this tournament until Saturday, but that actually, to me, makes Thursday and Friday like the most exciting because it's only the top four players from each round move on. Top four best scores, not four win your card or anything like that. So
it's gonna be a nail biter.
Yeah,
I really like this format too.
I do too.
Super exciting.
It's just fun. It's different. It lends itself to a little more drama. We've seen in the last couple years that, like we talked to Chris, like he's come out of the first day and gotten into groove and won this tournament. So it's not necessarily. I mean, yes, it's an advantage physically because it's less taxing on your body to play only a round or two. But some of these men and women who play early kind of jumpstart their tournament. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see if anyone comes from day one to make the final round. Sarah, have you ever played Hornet's Nest?
Yes, but it has been, man. So I played the 2012 world championships there, right, where it was pro and am the year that Sarah Hokum won. And it's that's probably the last time I played it.
And I think they've tweaked this course pretty significantly for championship level.
Yeah, they had to like reconstruct several of the holes just in general. I will just say no, because I have no idea what the current course even really plays like.
Okay. Well, on the MPO side, it's a par 64, 9,316 feet with just one par 5, 17th. On the FPO side, it is, I hit the wrong button, par 66, just under 8,500 feet with, again, itself just one par 5. But, you know, it's got a mixture of woods, it's got a little bit of water, couple open park holes. It's just a pretty well-balanced course from what I recall. It'll be fun to check it out all on the Disc Golf Network. It'll be going live this week. We will also have post-production with Jomez, Gatekeeper, and GK Pro. And then if you remember, I think we mentioned this on the show last week, Sarah, the final round is going to be done in post-production for ESPN 2. We're not talking ESPN 8, the Ocho, or ESPN 3 or ESPN U or ESPN X or whatever.
Is the Ocho a real? Is that a real channel? I only
the
know
Ocho
that
they roll out. They roll out like a weekend every year of content that's like the Ocho. It's obscure sports. Yeah, it comes from Dodgeball, obviously, right, but they actually came out with a real thing, which is always fun. But this is ESPN 2, legit ESPN 2. And so it's exciting. It's an exciting format, and yeah, we got to make some picks, Sarah. So here's how we're going to do it for picks this week. There's no real top five because it's, you just make the final card on Sunday. So Sarah and I are going to pick a winner and top four. And then afterwards, we're also going to go over our brackets for the Bushnell Bracket Challenge, which is going on, and you can win some prizes. We'll talk about that in a minute. But let's do the picks first, Sarah. Let's do a rundown from USDGC and Women's Nationals, because I have no idea what the situation is now.
The situation is not good for me. I'll just say that. All right, so you picked Pierce and McMahon to win. I picked Katrina and Macbeth to win, so you got 2 points for Pierce.
Okay.
You picked Haley King and Emerson for top five. I picked Hokum and Nate Sexton for top five.
You got a top 5 point.
You got zero, and I got one for Hokum. And then Andrew Lockridge chose, zero for Hokum and Waisaki winners. He got 1 point for Heather Young and zero for Eagle top five. So that puts me in an even deeper deficit. You are at 35 points. I'm at 27, and the listeners are at 34. So you guys are battling. I'm not sure if I have enough holes left to make up the strokes here.
Yeah. Well,
okay. There's one event left. We'll see.
I'll be happy to go out with a win if I can. Yeah. Well then, so who's picking first?
So it looks like am picking first. No.
What? Really? I thought you picked
Cat. I don't think so.
First.
I've got this color coordinated.
Yeah. Well, no, you do. You do. You're right. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, have at it.
All right. So I'm picking winner of FPO.
Winner and top four. So winner and make it to Sunday for both. Yeah. But right, let's do winner first.
All right. I'm feeling really good about Katrina. I think she battled super hard this past week. Her putting looked great. Her driving looked great. She really needs a win. There's $15,000 on the line.
I heard that might get bumped to 20. I'm not 100%, but they were chit-chatting 20 for both. Whatever they're doing, I know it's going to be equal.
That's amazing. So I hope she wins and brings me some of that cash because they're coming back here. Oh, actually, she's got another event, and then she comes back here. But just kidding. You don't need to pay me or anything. But I would really like to see her win. So
maybe she could buy you another matching outfit.
That would be cool. Those are only $17. Can you believe that? And they're really good quality.
I'm going to abstain from comment.
Anyway. All right. Katrina Allen.
Okay. Paige Pierce. Thank you. That's easy.
Okay. All right. I'm going to have to reformat this a little bit, but all right. So then three more. So does Katrina count as one of my four, or do I pick four more? Oh no, so okay.
You make the top four.
Okay, got it.
All not right, your top so that four would players, be... sorry. We're just saying top four instead of top five.
Okay, so I'm just going off my bracket here. Yeah. So Paige Pierce, Hokum, and Heather Young.
No. You only pick one of those. We are pretending as if the final round is the top five.
Okay.
So
oh,
you
I
just,
see,
just
I see.
Pick one player.
All right, Sarah Hokum. Okay. I mean, even though the course is a little bit different, she's got good vibes here from winning Worlds.
Okay.
And she's good in the woods.
All right. I like it. I am going to take, let's see here. This is a tough one. Heather Young has really been playing very, very well. Even you know, going on kind of big vibes with women's nationals. So I'm going to give her a week off, and I'm going to take Holly Finley. I think Holly Finley is going to come out of the first round. She's going to play Friday. She's going to play well Saturday and make it to Sunday. Because I think, again, you know, when I think of a more wooded kind of technical course, Holly Finley is one of the ones that jumped to mind for me.
She actually, so this is the year that she played AmWorld and took fourth, I believe.
I feel like she made final round lead card last year for this. Maybe I'm misremembering.
Okay, well, I'm just thinking about 2012.
Right.
Still, when the course was completely different, so it really isn't even that relevant. But that year just sticks in my mind because it was like the first.
Okay, Holly Finley did not make the finals last year.
Okay. Well, she's got good vibes from this course too, all the way back to 2012.
There we go. We'll take it.
All right.
And
all right.
Okay, so
MPO.
Yeah, we got to pick MPO winner. Top four.
I'm going Paul McBeth.
Yeah.
I know I took him last week. Actually, I've taken him several weeks, and like, there's no way he can go this long without a big win. Like, he's gonna shoot lights out, I think.
No, look. If you didn't take him, I was gonna take him, and here's why. It's like technically two words. It's actually four letters and one number. ESPN2. Paul McBeth will elevate his game, knowing that he is going to be broadcast on ESPN2. Look at how the dynamic this Open went.
Yeah, very true.
Very similar situation. I fully expect Paul McBeth to elevate his game. So he would have been my pick had you not picked him.
Well, good.
Yeah.
All right, who's your second then?
Oh, man, I really want to pick Chris Dickerson, but... And he sounds real even keel to me still.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's such a, it's so mentally draining to go through USDGC and to turn it back around for this tournament. And I don't know. But then at the same time, my other pick's Calvin, and he went through just as much hell at USDGC, mm-hmm. if not worse. So why not? Let's ride with the Limestone Cowboy. Let's go. Three times in a row, Chris Dickerson.
Nice.
DGPT champion. Chicken fingers are on me if he wins.
All right. Well, you mentioned Calvin, so I'm taking him for top five or top four.
Yeah, that's a great pick. Top four for me, I want to see. This one's tough. I'm going to go with Garrett Gerthy. I think he's been playing real well. Yeah. He's sneaky good in the woods.
Yeah. I don't think we can write him off as a good woods player. I mean, he's like established himself as not just a distance player and an equally good woods player.
I mean,
player,
he did so. That like last year at Masters Cup.
I know,
Cup. Yeah.
But I feel like he still does. Yeah, Masters Cup, exactly.
But he's got the reputation precedes him of just being a bomber. But he,
right, exactly.
You know, he definitely bombs, but he's also been playing very well in more technical tournaments. So yeah, I think he can finish the season on a high note with a final round lead card appearance at the Disc Golf Pro Tour Championship. Yeah, so Sarah, the thing we forgot to really mention was like the payouts for this tournament are pretty big. As far as I understand, it's at least $15,000 for the winner on both sides. And I think they're paying out evenly to top three on both sides. I'm looking right now to try and confirm. The Disc Golf Pro Tour's website is a little bit, their organization on where they put certain articles always kind of throws me off sometimes. But suffice to say, Yeah, here we go. $15,000 for both men's and women's champions. I don't have anything on the rest of the payout, but I believe I saw somewhere that it was going to be the same, like, top three or top four. It would make sense to be top four, right? Make that final day, get paid the same amount on both sides.
Yeah.
Is $15,000 the highest payout? I mean, what'd the winner at USDGC win? Was it 10?
That's a good question.
It's usually around 10 to 12. We should know this. I'm sorry, people. It's been a busy week. I'm looking right now. That's if they're even up. Sometimes they're not even up on the payouts. Okay, yeah. Chris Dickerson won $10,000 for winning USDGC, and Paige Pierce won $3,000 for women's nationals. So Paige Pierce can go and win $12,000 more if she wins.
Yeah.
It's pretty impressive. So
that'd be a great payday.
Yeah. Oh, it'd be huge. That's a huge payday. $15,000, you get yourself like set for next season. That's a great way to finish the year. So that'll be a lot of fun. And then I do want to give people a reminder. If you want to win one of these cool Bushnell rangefinders that you see all the players using, go do the Bushnell Bracket Challenge. It's through UDisc Live, so it's udisclive.com/bracket. And essentially, you're going to pick your... It's going to be, like, who you think should win the Tour Championship. So you're going to pick your four players from each round, and then your champion. And that's it. So, Sarah, did you fill out a bracket?
I did.
Tell me just your quick, like, who's going from each round real quick.
All right. So round one, I chose Austin Hannum, Thomas Gilbert, Anthony Barella, Chris Clemens.
All right. I also have Chris Clemens, but I went with Jeremy Colling, Noah Meinsma, and Andrew Presnell, who always shoots hot first rounds. Who you got in going out of the quarters?
James Conrad, Emerson Keith, Adam Hammes, Chris Clemens.
Okay. I went Conrad. I think I'm gonna change. I think I'm gonna go with you on Chris Clemens too. So I went James Conrad, Kyle Klein, Chris Clemens, and Paul Ulibarri.
Oh, okay, nice. And then I went Paul McBeth, Calvin Heimberg, Chris Dickerson, Emerson Keith.
Okay, I went. Now again, our bracket picks are different than our show picks because we don't have to overlap, or we can overlap.
Right.
I went Paul McBeth, Calvin Heimberg, Ricky Wysocki, Garrett Gerthy, but I think just to match how I'm feeling on the show, I'm going to go McBeth, Heimberg, Dickerson, Gerthy. And then do you have McBeth to win it?
Yes.
Yeah, same here. All right, how about the FPO side?
FPO, I went Jessica Weiss, Heather Young, Ellen Woodboom, Vanessa Van Dyken.
Ooh, all right. I'm going Heather Young. I'm going... I apologize. I had not gotten through to my FPO picks yet. Holly Finley. I'm going Kona Panis and Missy Gannon.
Oh, okay. Very different than mine.
Well, Jessica Weiss, I'm concerned that she's throwing further lefty than I could when I'm healthy. And so I can't pick her just out of principle. No, we didn't even talk about that. She's playing half the whole... She's playing shots lefty because she's hurt.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate, but also really impressive to see how well she shoots lefty.
Yeah, her form is amazing.
Yeah.
I have like a spaghetti arm when I try to throw. It's like I've never thrown a disc before.
Yeah, total uncoordination.
Ridiculous. Yeah, pretty much. Semifinals, I went Paige Pierce, Katrina Allen, Sarah Hokum, Heather Young.
Okay, I'm going the top three of those, but subbing Holly Finley in there.
Nice. And then Katrina Allen.
All right, I went Paige Pierce. So, yeah, that should be fun. I'm excited to see how it all comes out. Again, this is all at udisclive.com/bracket. You get to pick, make your brackets. You can win a Bushnell rangefinder or some Bushnell binoculars. And yeah, go check it out. Fill in your brackets. Good times. Sarah, I know I saw you just sent me a note about Chains for Charity.
Yeah.
I did sign up for Chains for Charity. How did yours come out?
Pretty well. If you remember, I could not choose who I wanted to support, so I chose a lot of people. And I'll just go down the list real fast. So Sarah Cunningham got 13 birdies, Katrina Allen 37.
Dang, she got the same amount as my pick, Eagle McMahon.
Dang, that's a cool stat. I like that.
Yeah.
Sarah Nicholson 3 birdies and Ellen Woodboom 17 birdies.
Nice.
And yeah, and so I paid 50 cents per birdie and ended up owing $35.
All right. Well, I owe $1 a birdie, 37 for Eagle. I just went with one player to keep it simple. Nice. So Yeah, we'll have to check in with Yeti and see how Chains for Charity came out on the whole.
Yeah, definitely.
In terms of numbers, I'll touch base with him this week. We can report back next week. Cool. So, all right. Sir, do we have anything else before the end of the program today?
I had one run it or lay up.
Let's do it.
Okay. Fall is the best season. Do we even have fall out there? Like, what are your...
I know. Well, that's exactly what I'm so glad you brought that up, because that's where my... that's exactly where my brain went. So it is currently...
I feel bad for you.
It's currently... I'm refreshing. When I last checked my phone, it was 93. It's currently 90 degrees.
Okay, that's insane.
At 4:30 in the afternoon.
What?
I will say this, the other day we had some fall-like conditions where it was kind of cloudy and the high was like 69 or 70, and it was phenomenal. It was fantastic. But then 2 days later, we're back to this. I really do enjoy fall. Is it the best season? I have a hard time picking seasons. I enjoy Halloween. I enjoy Thanksgiving. Do we consider Thanksgiving to be in the fall?
Yeah, definitely.
I enjoy football and pumpkin pie. My wife's birthday is today, which is in the fall.
Happy birthday.
I can run it on fall is the best season.
Okay. I'm saying yes, it's the rest. I mean, not yes. I'm running it all day. Yeah. Because my birthday is November 1st, therefore, I feel like I've said this 1,000 times on this podcast, but I've always had Halloween-themed birthdays my entire life.
Right.
I'm from Philadelphia originally, and I've been living the South for 10 years, and they always say that uneducated people always tell me that, like, your body is going to adjust eventually to how humid and hot it is. And I'm here to tell you that in 10 years, my body has not adjusted. So I'm a sweater. And so as soon as the temperatures hit, like, low 70s to low 50s, I'm here for it. Actually, we woke up this morning and it was 49.
Oh, my gosh.
It's 6:30 p.m. here. And it's currently 67. It's still a little bit on the warm side. I think tomorrow is going to be like 80 degrees. But this weekend, it's supposed to be perfect fall weather.
All right. My one drawback with fall that is making me kind of reconsider running it, maybe more of a half run, kind of one of those like, I kind of want to make it, but there's danger behind the basket. Mm-hmm. Daylight savings time ends. And it gets dark earlier.
That's the one. Yeah. I mean, it's 6:30 here. Actually, around 6 p.m. it was already dark. Darkish.
Yeah, I mean, we've got like two more weeks, I think, before daylight savings is over. So. Yeah.
Oh, one thing that kind of adds to my running it is pumpkin flavored things. I am like that basic, basic person who loves all the pumpkin things.
Like, what is the one thing that you have now that, like, you know, because there's everything pumpkin, but that's really been, like, in the last, like, 5 years. Like, it didn't used to be everything. Like, what's the one thing that there didn't really used to be pumpkin of that you, like, absolutely have to have now?
So, I just came across this randomly at Kroger. I don't know if you've probably never heard of that.
Kroger, it's a store, yes.
Okay, do you have...
It's Ralph's here, but Kroger owns Ralph's.
You know, so I'm like moseying down the aisles looking for random things, and I come across Boom Chicka Pop pumpkin spice, but it's also got this like, I'd have to look it up, but it's like drizzled with something. No, probably it's not caramel. Caramel. Hmm. It's like, I feel like I have to look it up now.
Is it like Boom white chocolate?
Chicka, let me look it up. Pumpkin with, what is it?
I can't even find it.
I don't know. It doesn't say on the bag. But basically, it was... Oh, drizzled... Okay. Pumpkin spice drizzled kettle corn. But I swear it had a kind of a different... The drizzle kind of had a different flavor.
I don't know.
But that was a total impulse buy. I bought 2 bags of it. And it was absolutely delicious. And I finished both bags in like 3 days.
Yeah. Like, see, I can't. I was gonna give you a hard time about like some crazy flavored popcorn, but I will eat the like the dill pickle flavored popcorn from Trader Joe's. Yeah, that's good. so salty though. I saw, what did I see the other day? I saw it was like pumpkin spice, like Cheerios or something. Ooh. Absurd like that.
See, I'm all about it. I've got pumpkin spice or pumpkin, whatever, pumpkin flavored, like almond creamer for my coffee. Yeah. I've got like the flavoring for my coffee. I make pumpkin baked goods.
I am here for the pumpkin pie Pop-Tarts.
Oh my gosh, I need to find those.
They're really good. Okay. I want to hear from the listeners. I want to know how the listeners feel about pumpkin flavored everything this fall. So send us a note, radio@pdga.com, and tell us if you love pumpkin stuff or hate it. If you love it, I want to know what's your boom chicka pop? What's that random, weird, gross, or should be gross pumpkin spice thing that you actually love? Because like it. It's that time of year. It's that time of year.
All right, I have two more shout-outs, two more things. Yeah, let's do it. Number one, so this morning I launched a new Respect Her Game private Facebook group for women only.
Awesome.
Disc Golf for Women has been a great platform for women and supporters of women's disc golf to voice all sorts of stuff, from like your favorite pair of disc golf shoes to more serious topics like we've been delving into recently. But with 4,300 members in that group, and many of them men, there have been some issues lately with the male side of the membership, as you can imagine. And so we, as a kind of leadership team of Respect Her Game, took the liberty to create a private Facebook group. And I did hear from Valerie Jenkins that she is making the Disc Golf for Women page private.
No.
But I'm not sure what all that entails either. I'm not sure if they're going to get rid of all the men and then not allow them to rejoin, or they're just going to get rid of the troublemakers. I don't know what her plans are, but there's also some women who do not support the Respect Her Game movement, and I wanted to make sure that our group was for just women who support this women's movement. And so we went ahead and created the group, and as of a few minutes ago, we already had 300 members. So if you are a female disc golfer or know a female disc golfer, send her over to the group. It's just hashtag Respect Her Game, women only.
Very cool.
So check that out. And then also, we just dropped another Sinclair Disc Golf video on YouTube.
Ooh, what's the hook this week?
We just played straight up this course. There's a course in South Nashville, or a park in South Nashville, that's got two courses. One is an advanced level course, which is what we played, and then there's one that's called Baby Cane. It's Cane Ridge Park. We recorded that one also, so that will come out in a week or two. But yeah, it was perfect weather, perfect fall weather. But check that out, Sinclair Disc Golf on YouTube.
All right, cool.
Oh, and one more. Sorry about this. I feel like I've been doing this a lot lately.
Don't worry about it.
Sean and I were invited to be on another podcast last night. It's called The Last Cash, and it was formerly the Music City Disc Golf Podcast.
Oh, they changed it.
Yes. So Will McCaskill is still the host, and Marcus Rogers and Dr. Zachary Hoy were also joining us. But we talked. It was like a Smashbox length podcast, and it's also video, which kind of creeped me out. It kind of freaked me out, and I'm glad that Sean told me before we left so I could actually look like a human being. But we talked everything from Respect Her Game to my nutrition business to the partnership that PDGA is working on with USA Ultimate to Music City Open, like all sorts of stuff. So you should check that out. It's The Last Cash. You can check it out on YouTube. It's out now.
All right. Very cool.
That's it.
All right. Good stuff. All right. Well, hey, thank you again to Chris Dickerson for dropping by. And man, last week of big tournaments. So should be fun. If you have any feedback, send us a note, radio@pdga.com. Leave us a review on your favorite podcasting app. We love 5 stars, 6, 7, 8, 9, if you can. I don't know if that's a thing. Is that a thing?
Sure.
I don't think you can give that
just,
many stars.
Just give us all the stars.
Just give us the galaxy. Anyway, yeah, good show. All right. Hey, thanks, Sarah. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll catch up next week. Sounds good?
Yeah, sounds good.
All right. For Sarah Sinclair, I'm Steve Hill. This was PDGA Radio. Be good to each other, and we'll talk to you soon.